brain. You're kind of a terminal guy.
Like, yeah, all the Git commands, you just GA, GC,
oh, yeah,
GRB.
So maybe the life app would then be alias your most used commands.
Ah, yeah, that would be a generic way of doing it.
Welcome to the JS World Podcast, powered by passionate people. Here we interview our speakers from the JS World Conference. We talk life, tech, and all sorts of things. Like what we have to offer? Like and subscribe. And don't forget to follow us on @JSWorldConf on Twitter.
Hello, welcome to another episode of JS World Podcast. My name is Christopher. I'm a consultant working for Passionate People. And next to me is my coworker.
Yeah, hi everyone. My name is Matt. I'm a consultant also for Passionate People. And today we are so happy to have you, Eduardo. Please introduce yourself to the people who might not know you.
Looking at the camera?
Or for us, it's fine.
So my name is Eduardo. I'm a freelance in front-end development. I'm also a member of the VGS core team. So I'm the author of The Router and Pinia. And I spend roughly, I would say 50-50, maybe probably, I try to spend more time in open source, but I try to make a living out of it, and I really, really focus on anything that is front-end. So the routers is really a big topic, and other than that, I live in Paris, and I'm Spanish.
That sounds great.
Wow. So do you speak French?
Yeah. It's a little, native thing, actually.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that sounds
like I got a little bit when you were on stage with Guillaume before everything started, and I was listening in a little bit. I was like, are they speaking French? But Eduardo was Spanish, right? So I said, oh, this makes sense now. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the talk. How did it go?
I think it went well. It always feels, it feels a little bit weird after all 2 years of
pandemic.
Pandemic and no conferences. I think I've done one conference. Beside this one, after this conference on 2020, and I think the last one I did was in Texas, just a month after. So it feels like you don't have the same, you're not used to everything else. Like things change. I thought there were more people and everything. I was like, oh, weird. The place was different 2 years ago, but no, it's just the same place. It's just that you forgot. Other than that, it feels great. It feels great to give the talk again, see the small face around. It really feels good.
Yeah, and the room was full listening to you.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the topic that you were talking about today? And briefly, of course, because the whole topic wouldn't be squeezed to 10 minutes.
So. Right. So the topic was Pinia, which is a library I wrote for Vue. And it's a storm management solution. So it handles the state management and also all the things on top of state management. Like improving the developer experience with the dev tools, also the typing with TypeScript. And so is the successor of Vue.x, which was the official store solution before Pinia, for Vue 3. So Vue.x still, I think, will be probably forever the official one for Vue 2. And as we move forward, we might come with something new. And so it's great we have a different name so that Google search results are not messed up when you search for questions and answers, because the API is quite different. So my goal today was talking a little bit about how Pinia uses the reactivity system from Vue, how it takes advantage of some things like ref and wrapping, transferring refs that people might not be used to because it's not something you really use that much in applications. But I think it's really worth teaching a little bit because it does help you keep it in line with the mental model of having one source of data and having these declarative templates. So you can focus on how you map the templates to the data.
Sounds great.
Sounds like an interesting solution. I'm just curious, so the Pinia is the official state management tool for Vue 3.
Yeah.
Right? So has that always been the case? Was it developed with that in mind?
No, it wasn't developed with that in mind. It was developed because I had some frustration with the current Vue.x situation, especially with TypeScript, because it was created before TypeScript was really a thing. So the API didn't really work with it in terms of how it wasn't possible to type, or it was very cumbersome to type. And so I wanted to see an alternative to that, and I also wanted to simplify some of the APIs that I thought, after doing some consulting with companies and using it myself, I thought were not really relevant anymore, and people were very often just going around. So I'm talking about mutations mostly. People were sometimes writing one mutation that does all the state changes, and that will just remove the whole point.
I find it such an interesting concept where I remember back in the day when front-end development was very much different than it was now, right? Yeah. Remember the backbone situation, or even maybe jQuery, and now we're talking about state management where you have one mutation that like does it all.
Similar, right?
It's almost like similar, like we're introducing the same problem that we're now trying to solve with new tools again. So now that the Pinya has been introduced as like the official state management tool of Vue 3, where would you like to see Pinya grow towards?
I don't really think I project too much. I don't want to see it as something that has to stay there forever. I think just it's at least going to be the thing that we have now, so we're going to keep working on it. The API, we're still open like to new suggestions, and I think it's going to stabilize for a while, right? That's the point, to have something stable and to let users use it, build patterns around it. And way later on, if we find other ways of doing things that might be interesting to expose or to dig, we are going to explore those, and always in a way that we can keep things transitionable from one to the other. We don't want to change things too much. That will be breaking the ecosystem, and it wouldn't help.
It's quite a new thing.
A whole new thing. And I think Pinya is already very different. I mean, it's just that the main API is very similar to the old Vuex, and that's intentional. But I think that step of having something very similar is necessary if we want to build something really different in all the cases. But right now, so far, we don't have really a new thing in mind. So I just hope that it helps making applications better, at least the way it is right now. And if people see any problems, they report it so that we can improve on that. That's really my hope. It's not that it stays the way. I don't care if it stays the way or not. I just want something that works for people, right? If it's not the right way, then we change it. If it's the right way, that's the way.
Philosophy.
It's really the philosophy to work towards that.
As long as the developer experience is kept intact, you know, and people are liking what they are writing. So, yeah, that's it. And I really like that you pick the same developer experience that you have in the UX and port it here. So you're not going to teach people a new tool from scratch. It's going to evolve what the knowledge they have and just use it in a different way.
I think that's also something really nice about the Vue community in general, something that every single time that we have these conferences where I speak to people who are involved in contributing to something that has to do with Vue, developer experience is like right there at the top of the list, which is really nice, like always. I mean, we've all had the tools that we have to work with where we're like, wow, this is such a shitty experience.
That's a new thing that I need to know.
What I really like about Vue is that for someone like me, my first Vue experience was last October. But it was so easy to get into. Because it was well documented, the developer experience was there, like using the tools that Guillaume, for example, wrote, like CLI tools, like, wow, this is amazing stuff.
Even with Vite now, things got a little bit easier and faster.
A little bit faster. Vite is a French word, right?
Yeah, it means just fast. The adjective fast.
Vite's fast, because for a long time I was pronouncing it Vite, but. Vite, that's Vite, not Vite. But looks good. Great. So what are you doing in your life other than open source work?
I do my consulting, so I mostly do workshops.
Yep.
I do a lot in France because that's where I live, so tax-wise it's just simpler. It's pretty simple. And also because workshops are also the most reliable source of income at the same time, because I can use the content that I deliver to people and improve upon. And I just reuse that content quite a lot.
Okay.
And it's also, at least in France, because the government pays a part of it pays companies so they can give workshops to their employees. They pay more. So obviously my time is worth more that way, and I can spend more time doing open source.
But for which employee is the government? The people who are working for the government?
No. Everyone.
Everywhere.
Any company.
Okay.
French company.
That's a great support from the government.
I think probably in many other countries, probably you also have something similar here. Like, I doubt you don't have something similar in some way. Like,
we'll probably have something. Like, I'm not entirely up to date on like the textuals on this.
It would be interesting to find out, actually, because it sounds like pretty interesting to do.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if you can make a living out of this. It's a very different type of consulting, I would say, as well. Right?
So I also do some consulting sometimes, but it's just more tiring as an experience. But I still like it because it gives me some insight of how things are used,
yeah.
Some real world problems that I need to solve. Yeah. But most of the time, I just go as an expert on the project, so I just do 1 week of plumbing, basically. And it's really tiring because you just go through the worst part of the application.
Yeah.
And it's exactly the part when you do development that you don't want to do every day, but that's my everyday.
Yeah.
So that's why I only do it 1-2 weeks, but after that, I need to stop.
That's a nice way of sort of shaping your monthly payload of work.
Oh,
right?
No, because I wouldn't be able to do that monthly.
No.
It's too much.
You get to decide, like, okay, I'm going to do a week of plumbing, so you can mentally prepare for that. And then after that, you're like, I need some time off and some workshops to do just to get rid of the bad vibes, right?
Well, I need more than workshops. I need my open source time.
Yeah, you can imagine.
Like doing projects that are exciting.
But then the open source time, do you, maybe it's a bit of a blunt question, but do you get supported in the
I have a lot of donations. It's just that it's always complicated, right? Because even with a lot of donations, most of the donations come from people. Mm-hmm. So it's just whatever they can, right?
Yeah.
There are a few companies that give me money. Some of them give me substantial money, and of course, it varies. And that's the big issue. You cannot really rely on this. Myself, I cannot really rely on this as a source of income, because I've seen it go off. If you have a sponsor that gives you $1,000 a month, which I had once, they just can't
it's not sustainable.
Stop at any time, and that's okay. That's the point. That's
not
fine.
Recurring, so
it's recurring, but not forever. And there is no contract going on.
True.
And they are free to leave at any time, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's a very nice additional income stream, but not a reliable one. That's
not.
I think it's hard to make it reliable. I think there are very few people in the world. Make
it's kind of a donation, so you can you can force people to donate forever. So.
Yeah, and it's also
except when you sign up for a gym and you never go.
Imagine friends too.
Everyone is doing that. Yes.
I've been sponsoring my gym for the past year.
Yeah, I would like
5 or 6 times.
Yeah, I would like to lose the 10K, but you lose $10K, but not the 10K of your body.
Not take 10K of your body. It's crazy. Crazy.
That sounds great. So you have any other hobbies, anything that you're doing other than coding?
Oh yeah,
technicality.
I love languages.
How many of them you learn now?
I don't dive too much sometimes on the languages, but I speak Spanish, French natively. Like that's native.
Nice.
So I can read law text and stuff, because to me that's the level where
this is the high level,
right? If you read.
Can you read medical stuff?
If that's the bar you set, then more than half the country here doesn't know how to be a native speaker, because we don't understand
the laws.
But I mean, you can find your way through all the texts in reasonable, like a normal, like, as if you had to do it, I will do it. If I have to do taxes in the U.S., I just refuse it. Like, I don't want to do it.
That's fair enough, because you're not a native speaker.
Horrible.
It's too many intricacies.
But yeah, for example, English, I would just consider myself fluent. I'm fluent in English.
Yeah, fluent in English, Spanish and French.
I can live in a country where they speak English, no problem. Like, very, very comfortable. I can read books in English, very, very comfortable. And of course, in French and Spanish, I can also read things that are more complex,
novels,
like poetry. No, novels I can read in English as well, but poetry and things that just go with very subtle details of words.
Very deep in the language.
Yeah, because I studied both when I was a kid. And then I also speak, Portuñol, which will be the Portuguese mixed with Spanish, because it's so close to Spanish, I just learn Portuguese in a few weeks.
Really?
You can speak with people in a few weeks.
Both of them are romantic languages. You know, Spanish, Portuguese, and French, and Italian.
Italian
as well. Four of them. Romantic language. Yeah.
So it's very easy. And
Italian as well. You can pick up easily.
I know.
Right?
Maybe I probably do it at some point in my life. And I also did some 2 years of Japanese, but that's like very basic Japanese.
Now
I'm doing Chinese.
A bit hard,
but
Mandarin.
Mandarin, of course.
Yeah. Standard Mandarin.
Is it, what?
Standard Mandarin. You have several.
You have Mandarin will be the Chinese, and then you have also the written traditional Chinese and simplified Chinese. So I'm doing simplified Chinese, of course. Yeah. And they have, for example, places like Taiwan, Hong Kong, they're going to do traditional. I have different accents as well, a little bit. And then you have all the places that, so for example, you have Cantonese, which is a very widely spoken. And then you have all the other things like Tibetan and all the other more complex Chinese that I don't
want. You learned all of only Mandarin?
No, only Mandarin.
Okay. Okay.
I just want to be able to communicate with, there is a huge community in Vue, in China, of course. And so I see a lot of things happening in Chinese.
Sorry.
And I want to be able to, I want to be able to communicate with that community and also be able to read and stuff. But I'm going the academic way. So I'm just going through the courses that you happen to do when you learn the language, like in a school.
Yeah.
So it goes a little bit slow. I really take my time. Like, I put no pressure on myself. I don't need to move to China. I don't need to go there anytime.
Sounds like a nice and relaxed way to learn a language.
Yeah.
Well, the best way, the best procedure for anyone to learn a new language, what are you following? Any steps?
Go there. You have to go there.
Surround yourself with people.
You have to be with people that don't speak the language, and you will force yourself. This is a survival.
This doesn't work in Dutch words because I'm living here for 5 years.
But you also
I barely understand people speaking.
We also cater towards you, right? Because we
speak English.
Yes, but actually.
We should be more like the French in that sense.
I mean,
je n'ai pas parlez-vous anglais. Parlez-vous français.
Eunice,
and then, you know, just speak French.
Eunice, habla español.
Yeah, well, Spain is the same. Probably you probably have to speak Spanish. Also, you have many countries to go to.
Yeah, you know, only one couple of sentences in every language.
Suddenly becomes available to you.
Yeah, but the thing is, you still have to do some studying on the side.
Yeah.
But the best, it depends on what you want to do. If you just want to learn the spoken language, you have to speak it. I mean, even for learning a language, you have to speak it and change it. That's how the brain is going to construct all the neural networks for the language to work.
But where do you start? You start by speaking first or writing and reading first?
Myself, I'm reading and writing first. No, you do the three at the same time. You don't really. Yeah. No, you do the. No, you actually speak first. You speak first.
I speak first.
That's how I'm trying to learn Spanish.
That's how you learn.
Speak first.
It's supposed to be speak first.
Yeah.
Because this is happening to babies as well. We teach them to speak first, right?
Yeah.
But actually, we are not doing that because I learned to maybe write and read Dutch. And maybe listen to Dutch people as well, understand.
Yeah,
but I couldn't speak yet. Or I don't have, you know, this courage to do it.
Yeah, you have to take the courage and you have to listen and speak. That's what really moves forward the most your learning experience on any language. Doesn't matter what language it is. And then the reading and writing is just that you need, and it helps with the practice because you can do it by yourself.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You need the writing. So that's why I'm going very slowly, because I don't really speak Chinese to anybody apart from my teacher.
Yeah.
So
but have someone to speak to, like an hour a day.
Yeah.
You can learn in 1 year, cool. You can be fluent in Chinese.
Shall we start doing that in Dutch?
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, I hope to do that.
And you have to ask other people.
Yeah. So there's one final question that I would like to ask.
Absolutely.
This is always how we try to round off the interviews, which is, do you have that one developer life hack that changed your life? And would you like to share it with people? Okay.
Changed with us?
Well, they're always very personal when it comes, like, subjective to your environment. I don't know, I do a lot of things throughout my life that change. What would be useful?
Big one.
Anything like small? I have small things.
Yes, small.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big things. I mean, it's something that you would like to share.
I think that would be setting an alias on my command line. So, if you use code, if you use something that is on a terminal, then you are good to go. But if you don't want to open every time. Open code, file open, your folder, you have a common call code, and you do code dot, and I shorten that to C because it's easier, so I just do C dot to open the folder. That would be one of my life hacks.
Right.
But I have like, I don't know, hundreds maybe of aliases that I just swallow in my brain.
You're kind of a terminal guy.
Yeah, all the Git commands, you just G-A, G-C, G-R-B.
So maybe the life hack would then be alias your most used commands.
Yeah, that would be a generic way of doing it.
Yeah.
And inspire yourself from existing configs, especially the popular ones that are configurable, like Omaze Dispatch, Presto, and all these kind of things that already gives you a lot of aliases. And you can go into the source code and source files and look up the aliases, or just type alias and you have all your aliases.
Okay. Yeah, so that's great.
Cool. Nice. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Eduardo. It was really nice talking to you again.
Thank you, it was a pleasure for both of us.
Yeah,
thanks for having you.
I would love having you.
And we're off to the next one. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and until the next one.